All right, good evening, everyone. So first of all, a very special thank you to the Langers for opening their home for this shiur. We dedicate our learning Ilui Nishmas Bela Sasya Bas Yaakov Tzvi in the hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an Aliyah and the family a Nechama. So let's begin. So I'd like to try to do a little bit tonight, and by all means, I don't mean this to be a lecture, so you don't have to wait till the end to ask questions. You could feel free to jump in, contradict, get upset. We'll have a little bit of controversial things towards the end of Mirat Sashem. But yes, I figured, you know what, I don't know if I'm coming back here, so I might as well. So I want to share with you something that I found exceptionally striking in these parshios. The last couple of weeks, remember again, Truma, Tetzave, Vayakel, Pekudei, Kisisa, not as much, all deal with the Mishkan. Now, it's incredibly dramatic to think about the idea that you have four parshios in the Torah that deal with the Mishkan. So much of our activities of day-to-day Jewish life are not even explicitly mentioned in the Torah, but are learned out through some type of remez, some type of hint. Torah Shabbat Peh learns it out. And yet there are things which, at first glance, appear to be so fundamentally unapplicable, or really inconsequential to our day-to-day lives, yet the Torah Kedosha spends so much time focusing on it. So the Mishkan is one of these things. Like I said, we have four parshios devoted to the Mishkan. When are we going to have a Mishkan again?
Never.
Never, right? Remember again, in Meretz Hashem, we'll have a third Beis HaMikdash, right? B'mehira b'yameinu. But it's not like the Pshat of Mashiach comes, he's going to say, okay, I'm here, Mazel Tov, it's going to be a little bit of time until the Beis HaMikdash gets filled, I'm going to put you in a temporary structure called the Mishkan. We're never again going to have a Mishkan. The Mishkan was a specific structure that served the needs for Klal Yisrael over the course of 40 years in the desert, close to 400 years when we entered into Eretz Yisrael, but it's never again to be replicated. It's never again to be had. So you have to ask yourself a fundamental question, which is, if we're never again going to have a Mishkan, yet year in and year out, we read these parashios. Year in, year out, we learn these parashios. If it's part of the Torah, it means it has eternal significance. If it has eternal significance, then that must mean that there's something additional that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to convey to us within these details that requires us to go a little bit beneath the surface. Just in general, by the way, I will tell you, this concept of looking for the eternal message even in the most seemingly mundane of ideas is not just by the Mishkan, it's by every aspect in the Torah. You could take Chumash Vayikra, which almost deals exclusively with sacrificial law. So again, you would think to yourself, what does this have to do with anything? In each of those details of sacrificial law, there is some dramatic life lesson to be learned. So I want to point out one thing that has always caught my attention. I'm not sure why, but I find it one of the most dramatic pieces of the Mishkan. Take a look at number one. V'hayu ha-kruvim parsei k'nafayim l'malo, shochachin mekavim ha-kavim. So before we get to this, Torah describes the kruvim. So remember again, a little bit, I know you know this, but for sake of orientation. Quick review of the Mishkan. You have the chatzar, the outer courtyard. You have the entry point into the Mishkan. And then you have the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, of course, is the Aron. Inside the Aron are the Luchos. Torah describes over here what sits on top of the lid of the Aron. These Kruvim, two cherub-like figures. It's an interesting machlokas in the Farshim. What exactly they looked like. The Gemara Maseches Sota says they look like two children. One a boy, one a girl, facing each other. Now, why does the Kruvim catch my attention? Because they're an anomaly. The Torah, in no less than seven places, warns us against making graven images. In fact, again, it's the second of the Aseres Hadibros. It's one of the ones that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself communicated to us. Right? Lo sasuniti Elokei Zav Elokei Esav. You can't make graven images. Okay, we got it. Idolatrous. And here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding us to make Kruvim. Not only is he commanding us to make Kruvim, they're perched on top of the Aron, inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So here in the holiest place in the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding us to make these graven images. Not just that, but you know there were curtains all over the Mishkan, and the images of the Kruvim were woven into the curtains as well. So obviously, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us to make these graven images, and they occupy such a central role in the Mishkan, there must be something deeper. There must be some greater, deeper message for us to learn from these kerubim. So with that, take a look now at number one. V'haya kerubim parsei knafayim. So the Torah goes into great detail telling us about these kerubim. Their parsei knafayim literally have their wings spread upwards. Sochachim bekanfehem al haparochas. Shielding the ark, cover with their wings. Ufnehem ish el achiv. They had literally, they faced each other. Ela kaporis yupnei kruvim. Toward the ark cover, shall the faces of the kruvim. So the Torah not only tells us about making the kruvim, but the Torah gives us a number of very interesting details. Number one, they have to have their wings spread upwards. Number two, they have to face each other. And number three, their wings shield the aron. Their wings shield the ark. So the Sfarim, so in Hasidic literature, there's much written about each of these concepts. And really, I'd like to try to explore these ideas to bring to us kind of the contemporary message of the Kruvim. And I think you'll find, and this always amazes me in Torah in general, how from some of these facts that we all know, not, I'm not teaching you anything that you haven't learned beforehand, but you'll begin to see how from these simple details emerge such dramatic and profound life lessons. So let's start with the first idea. Pinehem ish al achiv. So if I were to ask you, what's the message in that posture? One kruv facing the other. What would you say? So achdos, friendship. Now remember, interestingly enough, so the first question you have to ask yourself is, what did the kruvim look like? Because depending what the kruvim looked like, also could determine this message. For example, there are among the commentaries who explain that the kruvim were male and female, not necessarily childlike, male and female. If you understand male and female, upnehem ish al achiv, what's the message?
Love.
Shalom bais. Right? I'm sorry?
I said
love. So this, by the way, is, so first of all, I'll tell you something amazing. You know, the Rambam discusses in Hilchos Deos, there's a mitzvah of Yahavta Hashem Elokecha, love Hashem. What's the problem with that mitzvah?
You can't force yourself.
You can't legislate love. Right, you could tell me to keep Shabbos, you could tell me to keep Kashrus, you could tell me not to wear Shabbos. You could legislate behaviors, you can't legislate emotion. So that's a fundamental question. The Rambam discusses, when he discusses love on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, you should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu like the love between a man and a woman. Which is an incredible idea. So what does the Rambam really mean when he says that? He means passion. He means that the same way that hopefully there's passion within a marriage, so ultimately, again, there should be passion in my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So according to that approach, if the Kruvim are facing each other, it represents, again, the like the husband and wife facing each other, interacting with each other, a passionate, loving relationship, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us as well. What else does it teach us in the realm of Shalom Bayis? This is not a Shalom Bayis here, by the way. Right, but what else does it teach us in the realm of
Shalom Bayis? Like the Torah should always be between.
So first of all, beautiful idea that ultimately, again, a successful marriage is one that is built on top of Torah. The Torah, the Shechina resides between the Kruvim. What else?
Communication.
Yeah.
Communication.
Excellent. Engagement. Pneim ish al achet. It's amazing. You know, the Gemara says, the Gemara quotes contradictory psukim. Sometimes the psukim say that the kruvim would face each other. Sometimes they would have their backs to each other. When they face each other, that's a sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's happiness with Klal Yisrael. When they face away from each other, that's a sign of divine displeasure. If you understand that there's a message of Shalom Bayis embedded over here as well, it teaches you that Shalom Bayis 101 is you have to engage with your spouse. You have to engage with the other. What does that mean? If I'm not looking at my wife and she's not looking at me, which means if we're not communicating, then at the end of the day, it's hard to build anything that is a sustainable model. And this, by the way, is an incredible idea, because what does it mean communicating? What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us, and I think this is really incredible, is one of the greatest challenges to Shalom Bayis is when one spouse assumes that the other one knows what they're thinking. Or, to say it a little bit differently, that one spouse, of course you should know what I'm thinking, right? You should know what I want. You should know what I need. You should know what you're supposed to do. No, I'm not a Navi. I can't know. I have enough difficulty figuring out myself, let alone figuring out what someone else wants without them communicating it to me. So it's an incredible idea of the Kruvim, the male and the female, facing each other. If you want relationship, there has to be Torah, there has to be Kiddusha, but perhaps even more fundamentally, there has to be engagement. I have to face each other. There has to be a connection. If there's no dialogue, if there's no connection, if there's no communication, it's impossible to build anything above that. Good. What else could it mean? Someone mentioned Achdus. Achdus, good. What else? Think simpler. Women always think too kind of too smart. Right?
Caring
for each other. Excellent. So this is so here the Baal Shem Tov brings down this idea. And he says something amazing. He says, we know we're supposed to be Ba'alei Chasadim. So when we look in our Torah, and we look at the example of a Baal or Baalas Chesed, who do we think about? Avraham Avinu. That's for men. For women? Sarah, but you don't really see, if you think about it, Rivka with the well. So Rivka is always the perfect example. So like if you ask, who is the paradigmatic Baalas Chesed? It's Rivka Imenu. Strange guy shows up, says, can I have a drink? She says, sure, and let me water your flock. Right? That, I don't know about you, but I don't know who could measure, or frankly, if we're supposed to measure up to that metric of Chesed. So the Baal Shem Tov says, people often think that to be a Baal or Baalas Chesed, like you have to do something magnanimous. You have to do something like overwhelmingly amazing. You just have to give to the other in such a dramatic way. So the Baal Shem Tov says, the Torah is teaching us something very simple. Do you know what it means to be a Baal Chesed? Upneihem ish al achich. Take the time to be cognizant of other people. Take the time to recognize the other. Take the time to go ahead and give people the time of day. To be a Baal or Baalas Chesed doesn't require you to volunteer for every single organization. If you want to do that, that's fantastic. It doesn't require you to give, you know, loads and loads of tzedakah. If you can, that's fantastic. It doesn't require you to chair every single event. On a most basic level, being a Baal Chesed or Baalas Chesed means upneihem ish al achiv. When I see you, I say hello. When I pass you on the street, I say hello. You're a human being, I'm a human being. This is true Jew, this is true Gentile, this is true anyone and everyone. This is true your friend in shul, this is true the person who bags the groceries at the supermarket. You recognize the humanity of another individual. Upneihem ish el achiv. You know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us? It's an incredible idea. Just be nice. Just be nice and cognizant of people. It's an interesting thing. If you try this, you'll find that people are often very startled by basic acts of human kindness interaction. How are you? How was your day? Nice to see you. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's, I will tell you, we were just away for Shabbos at a convention, and it's a Jewish event, so like there's food all of the time. And so the staff that's there was, I mean, they were like working like 15 hours. And there's a guy who's like mopping up the floor, because you know what happens, someone's kid decides that he wants to pile 57 things on his plate, right, and carry, and he drops it all. And of course, what does he do after he drops it? He walks away, right? And some guy who's triple his age, right, goes ahead and sits out there with the mop and starts, and the truth is, besides the fact that it's heartbreaking, because no one says when they're a little kid that I hope to be cleaning up after some little Jewish schnook at the age of 57. Like, that's no one's life aspiration or idea. And it's amazing if you take a moment to say to a person like that, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for cleaning up. People don't expect it because for whatever reason, most people either don't do it or have difficulty doing it or feel awkward doing it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't need you to be Rivka Imenu. I don't need you to do that. I just need you to be a kind and decent person who recognizes the other. Upneihem ish el achiv. Just be cognizant and be kind to the other. People you do know, people you don't know. Give them the time of day. Because when you give them the time of day, you recognize their humanity. You know, there's an incredible story that's told. That after Rav Moshe Feinstein Zechatzadik Levracha passed away, so his sons were kind of trying to take over certain things for him. So I don't know which son this occurred with, but one of the sons of Rav Moshe was in his father's study on Erev Shabbos, and the phone rang. And the son picks up the phone. It sounds like an older lady with a broken English. And she says, you know, what time is Licht benching? Time is candlelighting. So this Rav Moshe's son gives her the time. Says, okay, have a good Shabbos. She calls back the next week. Same thing happens next week. She calls back the next week. And she says, you know, what time is Shabbos? The same son answered. He gives her the time. Good Shabbos. Happens a third week. The same son happened to be in the study at the same time. So he gives it to Avraham and says, you know, I'm sorry, ma'am, you know, you should just know, you can get a calendar. Like, you know, you don't have to call every single week. You can get a calendar, they even give them out for free, and you can have halakas neiros times right on your refrigerator. So she was very apologetic. She said, I'm so sorry. She said, you know, I just used to call Rabbi Feinstein every Friday afternoon for the last 30 years for candle lighting times, and he always gave it to me. What makes great people great are not the Rivka Imenu type acts. Those are what make people out of the ballpark. Here, Ramosha Feinstein, who was the undisputed Gadol Hadar, who carried the weight of Klal Yisrael on his shoulders. But when some woman, who he, I don't know if he didn't know or he didn't know, would call him up and say, what time is Shabbos? He would have been absolutely within his right to say, lady, listen, I told you once, I told you twice, I'm going to send you a calendar. Happy birthday. Right? I'm going to send you a calendar. Hatzlach, I'll send you 5 calendars. Right? And the Gadol Hadar, I can't deal with this now. 30 plus years, he's taking this woman's phone call, answering her, what time is Hadlakas Ner Shabbos? That's Upinehem Ish El Achiv. That's what it means, just simply to be attentive to the needs of the other, on a simple way. We often have this idea of Chesed being like this superhuman powerhouse of just kindness and piety. That's great if you could pull that off. But all Kodesh Baruch Hu really wants of us is Upneim Ishalachiv. Be kind and cognizant of the other. There's another piece, the Baal Shem Tov goes on, he says something amazing. He says, Upneim Ish El Achiv. He says, Achiv could also refer to the self. So what does that, if you understand that Achiv refers to the self, so what does Upneim Ish El Achiv mean? What's the message? Right? Be kind to yourself. And the Baal Shem Tov also says, kind of the corollary to that, is being an introspective person. A lot of times in life, we're not self-aware. We do things and we say things and we act in certain ways and we're not always realize what the motivations are for our actions or for our behaviors. In life, it is so important for a person to be self-aware. Why do I do the things I do? Why do I behave the way I behave? Why do I say the things that I say? Why do I interact? And by the way, that's both in a good way and it's not all negative. It's both ways. Upneim Ishal Achiv, take the time to introspect. You know, one of the, you know, the Ramchal writes about this in the first chapter of Mesiyas Hasharim, the Shara Zahirus. So what's Zahirus? So essentially what the Ramchal says, Zahirus is living life with awareness. Living life with awareness. The mashal he gives is that life is like walking on the edge of a cliff. So if your eyes are open and you're attentive, you'll be just fine. If you decide to close your eyes and not pay attention, you're going to have big tsaris. Zihiris means being attentive. So, you know, Rabbi Nachman writes about this extensively, the need to take time for his bodidos. Now, I'm probably talking to the wrong group of people for time with his bodidos, right? Forget about taking walks in the forest and contemplating the deeper meaning of life. I'm sure you'd like to have 3 minutes of no one, you know, pulling you in 50 different directions. But that being said, you have to carve out the time. Everyone needs a little bit of time, even if it's 5 minutes, to be able to shut everything else out and to be able to introspect. Where am I holding? Where am I holding in life? What am I doing? Where am I going? You know, we get so caught up. And especially, again, a group of young women who are pulled, I'm sure, in a million different directions. We get so caught up in just managing the tasks of day-to-day life that we forget, like, to think about who we are, what we are, and where we're going. Like, what's my life plan? And the life plan can consist of, well, I have 3 carpools I need to get to in the next hour. That's a necessity of life. That's something I have to do. That's not my life plan. That's an activity of daily living that I have to do. Upneim Ishal Achiv means I need to take time for introspection. I need to take time to look inside myself and to figure out ultimately, who am I? Where am I going? What am I doing? And I would suggest that this doesn't require hours upon hours of time. You would be surprised what you could accomplish in 10 minutes of silence. Now, I know you're thinking to yourself, 10 minutes of silence is such a man thing to say, 10 minutes of silence, right? 5 minutes of silence. where you shut down every device at a time where no one else is around. 5 minutes. You could accomplish a lot in 5 minutes just in terms of taking personal inventory of who you are, where you want to go, and what you want to do in life. That's Upneim Ishal Achiv. So far, again, we have these two ideas. Upneim Ishal Achiv, Chesed, just means being cognizant and kind to the other. Upneim Ishal Achiv, be introspective and contemplative. Next, Parsei Kenafayim. So this is incredible. So the position, so if I were to ask you, if you were commissioned to be the artist for the Kruvin, so you're supposed to make like winged-like angelic figures with the face of children, what position would you have created the wings in? Closed, right? I'll demonstrate, right? You would have kept the wings like this by the side. But interestingly enough, that's not how the Kruvim's wings are positioned. The Kruvim's wings are positioned in an upward position. So what do you think the message is in that?
It's protecting the Luchos.
Good, beautiful. Hold on to that. We're going to get to that next. Good, what else?
About to fly.
Excellent. So we're going to come back to protection, but first, if you think about it, when does the bird or winged creature lift its wing? When it's about to take flight, right? That's the moment, right? The bird gets its gust, right? Or its flight when it flaps the wings down. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Berditch, it's such a beautiful idea that ultimately, again, the Kruvin teach us a profound idea, which is in life, you must be in a constant mindset of growth. You have to always be ready to take flight. There is no such thing as stagnation. There's no such thing as reaching the finish line. There's no such thing as I'm done, I'm good, I've arrived. Life requires us to grow at every single juncture. We reach one milestone, fantastic. You can celebrate it for 3.5 seconds, and then it's time to move on to the next thing. Life is about constantly flapping your wings and going from accomplishment to accomplishment. And this again requires us, everything kind of goes back to taking a little bit of time to think and to contemplate. Because I have to always think, what's my next goal? What's my next goal? Like, what's my next avoda? What do I, not a task. Remember, again, we have to distinguish between tasks and goals. Tasks are the things I have to do day in and day out because I have responsibilities. Goals are my bigger life aspirations and dreams about who do I want to be? What do I want to do? What do I want to accomplish? Because life goes by so quickly that if you don't think about these things, you find that you're 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 119, and you haven't accomplished the things that you want to accomplish. I haven't flapped my wings in the way that I need to because I really just haven't taken the time to give it thought. So Parsei Kenafayim means you have to fly. You have to grow. Life is about perpetual movement, perpetual growth. Now the interesting part over here is something amazing. Remember, where are the Kruvim situated? Where are they? Right, on top of the Aron, which is situated where? In the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now one would have thought the Kodesh HaKadoshim, like that's the finish line. Where do you go in the world of holiness after the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So I don't know, but apparently there's somewhere else. Even the Kruvim, which are sitting in the Holy of Holies, which for us represents the holiest spot on the face of the earth, even if you got to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you still have to have your wings outstretched, ready to take flight. Growth is a constant requirement for the Jew. But let's focus now on this next piece of protection. Because even the Pasuk itself seems to indicate this idea. Shielding the ark covering with their wings. So what does it mean that the Kruvim are protecting the Torah? What does that mean to you? Why does Torah require? What's the protection? What would you say?
Because children are very pure, so it's like purity, shielding the Torah from the impure.
Beautiful. So it could very well be excellent that if you take the idea that the Kruvim represent children, then ultimately, again, maybe it's a message to the parents about shielding the purity of your children, which is probably one of the greatest challenges in contemporary chinuch today, about how you keep your children pure, or I don't know if pure is the right word, sheltered, unaware of many things, but yet not unaware of everything. But here the Torah is good. What else could it mean?
Like If a Shambai is, if they have Shambai for the Shekhinah to come through the Torah.
Beautiful. So it could very well be that this idea of the wings lifted upwards is a din of protection of everything the Kruvim represent. So it's protection of children. It's protection of a marriage, Shalom Bayis. And maybe what it all centers on is the home. Right? If you understand that the Aron, that the Kodesh HaKadoshim is like the home, so the Kruvim have their wings outstretched, which, if you think about this, is an incredible, incredible idea. Because the truth is, especially in today's day and age, we have to be very protective about the influences that we allow into the home. You know, I'll just give you like a mashal amad davar doma. You know, I'm not like such an old person, but I feel like an old person. Because I sometimes think like to back when I was a kid, and it just seemed the world was much simpler and things were much purer. Today, like, I'll give you just a simple example. So the truth is, you know, I get the Wall Street Journal at home because it's a pretty, like, as far as newspapers go, it's like a pretty good newspaper. So what's on the front cover of the Wall Street Journal today? It's on the front cover. The Pope, called a meeting of all the bishops to address, sex abuse by clergy in the church. And like, it's on the front cover of the newspaper. So again, as an adult, fine, it's wonderful that the church is tackling this. But I think to myself, okay, I take in the paper and I realize I can't leave this out because I don't want to answer any questions, right? I'm just not, there's too much going on. And more importantly, like, I'm actually just not interested in, more than not interested, I would be heartbroken if my children who are too young to know of certain things would be exposed to that. And again, this is as far as newspapers. Maybe you can make the argument that you shouldn't get a newspaper. I don't know. I'll do a cheshbon on that in my 5 minutes of his bodidus tomorrow. Right? But you know, it's a different world. It's a different world. And this is, aside from the internet, and this is not an anti-internet drasha, but again, you have to be aware. You just have to be aware. If you want to go ahead and preserve Kedusha in your marriage and preserve Kedusha in your children, the Kruvim have to have their wings up. You have to have your eyes open at all times for any influences that pass through your door. And there's another piece. Because the truth is, for those of us who are out in the world, sometimes we don't even realize how our exposure to greater society impacts us. And we don't realize that when we come home, everyone likes to say they leave work at work. We don't. The influences of happen during the day, the way people speak, the way people dress, the way people conduct themselves, those things like imprint on us. And when we come home, they come through the door with us. And sometimes, again, we don't even realize how it comes out in the way we conduct ourselves. Because if you're spending a large amount of hours in a workspace that is not necessarily conducive to your spiritual values, which is the workspace that most of us spend our time in, it's hard to disassociate from those influences. So the wings have to be up. And again, how the wings go up and what that means, you know, it's different for every person. It's different for every mishpacha. And in no way am I suggesting that you become Amish and cut yourself off from everything in the world. That's not a healthy thing either. But we do have to be careful. And we have to be vigilant. And the wings always have to be raised. Because the moment that the wings are not raised, the Torah is not protected. And the moment that the Torah is not protected, ultimately, again, is the moment that the fabric of everything begins to unravel. The fabric of marriage begins to unravel. The fabric of children begins to unravel. Everything unravels. But I want to point out to you something very interesting. If you take a look at number 3, they throw in a little bit of interesting controversy here. So first of all, I'll point out something. So the idea that we're going to focus on now is that the Torah requires protection. So what I want to focus on just for the last few minutes is, so how do we do that? So how do we protect the Torah? So we understand that it refers to Torah in our children, it refers to Torah in our marriage, the Kedusha of the home, the Kedusha in ourselves. So how do we preserve it? So look at this Gemara number 3. So the Gemara says as follows. Only Rav Rabbi Chiya. So Rav says Rabbi Chiya. Noshim b'may zachyon. So literally translated, what merit do women have? What merit? Now, Zaken we're going to see means actually something a little bit different. It really means in what merit, in what merit do women succeed? That's really the real definition. So the Gemara says, Bakriye banagu lebe knishta. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Chiya said, for they merit reward for bringing their children to read the Torah in the synagogue, for taking their children to school, and for sending their husbands to study Mishnah in the study hall, sending their husbands to the Beis Medrash, and for waiting for their husbands to come home from the Beis Medrash. Okay, good. Tell me what your thoughts are on this Gemara. First of all, what does it mean? What does it mean? Before we get to your thoughts and feelings on it. What does it mean? I'm sure there are some opinions on the scheme.
From what I've understood in the yes. past, generally it means because women aren't required to keep a lot of the mitzvos that are time restraints. So, therefore, what is our way to get to Olam Haba if most of these things are not requirements for us?
Good. So that seems to be the straight reading of the Gemara. Nashuva Maizachin means, I don't understand. Women don't have as many mitzvos as men. Right? Women are exempt from all mitzvos, aseisha as man grama, all time-bound mitzvos. So men have all of these mitzvos in which to get to Olam Haba. Women don't have all of these mitzvos to get. So how do women acquire their share in the world to come? How do they become, so to speak, spiritually accomplished? So what does the Gemara essentially answer?
Through their husbands
and their children. Through their husbands and their children. Good. So what are your thoughts on this? Good. I know. Oh, we're getting somewhere. Good. Right? Good. 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 Why not?
Because I can't force anybody else to do something they don't
want
to do.
So, first of all, excellent point. Excellent point. Which is, this is a tall order. Because, again, so I, as a man, I control my ruchnius. Because either I do the mitzvahs or I don't do the mitzvahs. If I do it, great. If I don't do it, then I... But what the Gemara seems to be saying is, okay, so a woman fully self-actualizes through making sure that her kids do what they're supposed to do, her husband does, there's only one problem. You can't control other people. You can't control your husband, you can't control your kids, and even if you could control your kids when they're younger, we all know that age of parents being able to control their kids goes down a certain number of years with every single generation. All right, good. What else do you think about this Gemara? What else is intriguing about it?
Not all women get married.
What do you do? Excellent point. So what do you do if a woman doesn't have children? A woman doesn't have a husband. A woman has a husband. And she's not blessed with children. So like, what does this mean? So what does the single woman do then in this worldview? What else?
We have a lot more to offer than just doing everything through other people.
Wonderful. Wonderful. It's like a therapy session. This is great. Excellent. Meaning... The strange part, and I'll say this again, I want to tell you, Gemara has always intrigued me because I just never fully understood it. Like, to essentially what it's saying is, the job of a woman is a support role, right? The job as a woman is a support role, right? And the self-actualization of a woman is not really from anything she does, but it's in her ability to support those around her. Which, okay, is fine, except because of all the, I can't control that. What happens if I don't have these other people in my life? And doesn't a woman have more to offer on her own level, just by herself, than just what she can do for other people? All incredibly legitimate questions. So I want to share with you what I think is an insight into this Gemara. So take a look at number 6. I actually mentioned this a few weeks ago in one of my other shiurim, and it struck me in such a dramatic way. Take a look at number 6. So the Torah says, this is reading in Parshas Tetzaveh. So just to give you a little bit of context with this, so remember again, Parshas Tetzaveh, we'll take a look. Number 6. Ve'ata Tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael, you should command b'nei Yisrael, v'ikhu elecha shemen zayis zoch kasis lama'ar. And Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, go and collect olive oil. Right? Pure olive oil, laha'alos ner tamid, to go ahead and fuel the menorah. So the question that all of the Mefarshim kind of jump on over here is the following. The collection of materials for the Mishkan was really fully set out in Parshas Truma. Tetzaveh is really about Aaron and his sons and the big day kahuna. It's not about collection of materials. So if you were putting these parashios together in reality, you would put the collection of olive oil in the beginning of parashios Truma, together with the gold, the silver, everything else. Yet, it's separate. So if you look at number 7, the Al-Sheikh says something absolutely amazing. The Al-Sheikh writes, this is 7 Aleph. V'hu, ki hine in sofek, ki 7 Aleph, ki acharei ra'us Moshe, es kol ma'asa ha-mishkan ki norahu, lasos lo mikdash, lishkon kalokim bezochenu, I'm just going to read 2 lines and I'll translate. Ves an ves banal lefana v'svarach. Halo yischametz levavo lemar. Mazos asa Elokim li. Ki ein li chelik bedavar hagadol hazeh. What is the Al-Sheikh saying? If you're Moshe Rabbeinu, how are you feeling? Come Parshas Tetzaveh. How are you feeling? Left out. Why? You put out a call to Klal Yisrael to collect gold, silver, precious materials. Moshe is not part of that collection. Then Aaron and his children become the Kohanim. You're not a Kohen. See, here you have Moshe Rabbeinu, right, the greatest prophet of all time. And yet, again, he has absolutely no role in the construction, creation, or fabrication of the Mishkan. Very strange. So says the Al-Sheikh, Moshe Rabbeinu feels left out. He feels marginalized. Why don't I have a role like everyone else? We don't think about this because we think of Moshe as like the quarterback of everything. But in reality, Moshe Rabbeinu participates pretty much in nothing. It's only at the end of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who actually erects the Mishkan, right? He's the one who actually puts it up because no one else can put it up. But at the end of the day, he's not involved in any of these pieces. So look what the Al-Sheikh says. Paragraph Beis. Uma gam bitam sha'amilas va'ato kemagbia kol va'omer va'ato Moshe al tochush, don't be upset. Why? Ki chelkicha godol mikulam, because your portion is greater than anyone else's. Ki aleish, listen to this phrase, ki alo shlimus kulam al yadchahu. How would you translate that phrase? Ki shlimus kulam al yadchahu.
Their completion is because of you.
Their completion is because of you, which means what? In other words, Moshe, what are you?
You tie it all together.
You tie it all together. Give me one word. Complete. Complete them. Good. What else? You are the enabler. You are the enabler for everyone else's self-actualization. You are the guy who, not the guy, I'm sorry. Moshe, you are the person, right? You are the man who allows everyone else to become the best they can be. You are the enabler. And the Al-Sheikh says something so beautiful. He says, this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to collect the olive oil. See, what's the olive oil? It's right, if you fill up the menorah, you light the wick. So you figure, what's burning? What's burning in the menorah? The wick is burning. But the truth is, it's not the wick that's burning. What is the wick doing? The wick is drawing up the oil. If there's no oil, it's true, you need a wick to burn. The wick is going to be what gets all the attention. Because the wick is going to burn bright, the wick is going to be beautiful, the wick is going to be wonderful. But at the end of the day, it's the oil that's there that enables the wick to burn. Without the oil, the wick cannot burn. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you are the enabler for everyone else. You are the one who brought down the Torah and gave it to them. Without that Torah, there's nothing. You are the one who is the mouthpiece of God, right, in this world. Without that Nevuah, they are nothing. So it's true, Moshe. You're not, quote-unquote, directly involved. You're not giving gold, silver. You're not the Kohen Gadol or regular Kohen. But Moshe, you are the enabler for everyone else's self-actualization. And says the Al-Sheikh something absolutely amazing. Sometimes in life, we think that the greatest things we do are the things we do for ourselves. I don't mean for ourselves like in a selfish way. I mean the things we do ourselves. What are my greatest accomplishments? My greatest accomplishments today was I davened, I gave tzedakah, I learned, I did bigger cholim. I'm talking about the things I did. The Al-Sheikh says sometimes the greatest things we do in life are not the things we do for ourselves, but it's our ability to go ahead and enable the growth and self-actualization of others. That was the gadlus of Moshe Rabbeinu. If you think about this for just a moment, What are Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest accomplishments? What are his accomplishments? Let's go through them. Right? Took Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. But was it Moshe took Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim? No, it was a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Meaning he was the front man, but it was God. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest accomplishment? He brought the Torah down. Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest accomplishment is that he served as the bridge between heaven and earth. He served as the bridge between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. Someone had to go up to the mountain for a total of 120 days and not eat and not drink, but just bring down the Torah. That is Moshe Rabbeinu's... By the way, that's why he's forever known as Moshe Rabbeinu, because his crowning accomplishment is the bringing down of the Torah. What's significant about the bringing down of the Torah? That he is the enabler of Klal Yisrael's self-actualization to this very day. Anything that I become in my life is a credit to Moshe Rabbeinu, because he enabled me to grow, because he gave my ancestors the Torah. And the Ashik says this amazing idea, that in life, it's not our personal accomplishments which are our greatest accomplishments, but sometimes it's the way we enable others to be great that becomes the crown jewel of our life accomplishments. And if you think about this, it's a very simple cheshbon. You see, when you accomplish something on your own, so what do you have? What do you have for yourself? I don't know, that sounds like a strange question. Right? When you do something, you do a mitzvah, so what do you have? The mitzvah, right? The mitzvah. When you enable people to do things, their actions are misyachis to you. You have a share in their actions. So if I enable Reuven to go out and do something, if I'm the enabler of his growth, that means when Reuven goes out and does something, I share the credit. So now what ends up happening? What ends up happening? It's like now, not only do I have my own deeds that are misyachis to me, but what? I have a share in the self-actualization of another person because I enabled that person's growth. The greatness, and this is such a different mindset in the world of spirituality, because we often think that in the world of Ruchnius, it's about what can I accomplish? And again, yes, we have to accomplish a lot. What the Ashik says is that's true, but when you enable someone else to self-actualize, that's a force multiplier in your schar. Because suddenly it's not just you doing all the great stuff that you're doing, but you have a chilek in that other person's schar zone. If you think about this for a moment, the truth is, what was Avraham Avinu? Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu that your descendants are going to be, right? Kekoch ve'ashamayim, the stars of the sky, like the dust of the earth. What's the obvious shayla? What's the not so obvious shayla? Did that bracha come true? No. Do we think it's going to come true? Is Klal Yisrael going to be like the stars of the sky? No, there's no reason to think. I remember, again, I want to be clear. We're not a proselytizing nation, so we don't go out converting people. When Mashiach comes, we don't accept converts. There are no gerim once Mashiach comes. So, we're never going to be like the stars of the sky. That's not our destiny. So what does it mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us this? I just want to tell you something amazing. Avraham Avinu is our father. But understand, Avraham Avinu is the father of, or I should say, all the major faiths trace themselves back to an Abrahamic patriarch. Not just Judaism, Christianity, Islam. Avraham Avinu is responsible for the proliferation of God in this world. Everyone, almost everyone, who believes in God in some form. Again, I'm not giving my stempel on other forms of theology. It doesn't matter. But the point of view is, if you think about this, God is in this world. Why? Because of Avraham. Okay, so there might be, obviously, we know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and we obviously do not subscribe to the other concepts of God as espoused in other religions. But it is amazing to think about the fact that the world believes in God because of Avraham Avinu. Isn't that an incredible thing to think about? Whether you agree with their theology or not is irrelevant right now. The world, humanity, believes in God because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in that respect, Avraham Avinu's theological descendants are like the stars of the sky. What was the greatness of Avraham Avinu? You have to understand something. You know, Avraham Avinu, the Medrash tells us that when he left Haran, he had thousands of followers. Right? Thousands. He converted the men. Sarimenu converted the women. Thousands of followers. They get to Haran. Who's left when they come to Haran? Who's with Avraham in Haran? It's Avram. Who else? Sarai. And? Lot. What's your question? Where did everyone else go? Where did everyone else go? So Soloveitchik has a beautiful insight. He says, it's very simple. They went home. The Shabbaton was over. You know how it is. You know the Shabbaton. Everybody's singing. It's beautiful. It's Havdalah. It's a Kumzitz. And everybody's inspired. And it's fantastic. Let's go. And then what happens? Then what happens? You turn back on the lights. Right? Life goes back to normal. You check your email. And the inspiration is gone. That's it. So they petered out. So Avraham Avinu leaves with thousands of followers. And he comes to Canaan with his wife and his nephew. But Avraham Avinu's success was that he was the enabler of growth of everyone around him. It's true, those original followers left, but Avraham Avinu is responsible for enabling the growth of theology, of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of humanity. So you begin to see that our greatest people are not necessarily, their greatness doesn't lie in simply the things they did for themselves. Their greatness lies in their ability to enable and to bring out the greatness in the other. Bring this back for just a moment to that Gemara that I know you all love. So right, what did the Gemara say? So let's go back to number 3 for just a moment. So what does the Gemara say? Noshin b'nai zachyon. So how does a woman merit? Now remember again, zachyon means almost how does a woman reach the pinnacle of her self-actualization? The Gemara here is not saying that the way a woman finds value is only what she does through others, for others I should say. Of course, every human being has things they have to do themselves. Man, woman, child. What the Gemara is asking over here is, tell me, what's the pinnacle of accomplishment? So what does the Gemara say? Bakrei banai lebei kenishta. So this is amazing. For bringing their children, literally, bakrei banai lebei kenishta. Now, akrui literally means what? What do you see in that word? Akrui. Oh, so that would be with an ayin. Good, that would be with an ayin. Right, calling. So if you want to be a literalist, you know what akruye banay lebe kenishta means? They say, children, it's time for school, and everyone's lined up at the door, ready to go, because they're so excited to learn. Now this obviously is a utopian world, but what is it saying? Do you know what the hallmark of a successful woman, and by the way, you're going to see now, this is not just women, this is Moshe Rabbeinu, this is Avraham Avinu, is, do you build a home in which your children are inspired to learn? Now, I don't know that comes out, that your children are waiting for you to take them to school, they can't wait to get out. I don't know any children like that. But if they, you know, children like that, you probably should have them speak to someone. Right, Mamish, yeah, kids are kids. But what it's saying is, do I create a home? Do I create a life that is conducive to my children's spiritual growth, that my children want to learn? I don't mean that they want to learn and not play. That's not what I mean. I mean, but do my children love Torah? Do my children love Yiddishkeit? Do my children love Jews? Do my children love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Do I enable them to find their greatness? So this is amazing. Sending their husbands to shul. What does that mean? I'm sorry? Waking them up. And this goes to the Akeras Habayis thing. That again, you know, I always tell this whenever I meet with Chassanim and Kalas. I always say, you know, there's a Minhag Yisrael that the Kala walks around the Chassan 7 times under the Chuppah. So why does the Kala do the walking? Why doesn't the Chassan do the walking? Or why don't they split it, you know, half and half? It's a very simple reason. The walking around 7 times represents the creation of a whole new world. The creation of the spiritual world of a home rests solely on the shoulders of the woman. It's not to like it or not like it. It's a reality. That's the Akeras Habayis. The spiritual vibe, the spiritual feel, the ruchnius of the home comes from the wife. Men, by definition, see, I have to understand something. Men, right? Man was made from what? Okay, don't have to say like that, right? Earth would be a little bit nicer, please, right? Good, right? Man was made from earth. Man was made from earth, right? Woman is made from man, from the tzela. Earth, by definition, what's the state of being of earth? Of dirt, right? Of mass? The natural state of being of mass is what? At rest. Remember again, matter only moves, it's like science, matter only moves if what? If it's acted upon. Right? You have to act upon it. Otherwise, it's going to be in a state of rest. Man, ultimately again, is Adama. So which means that in the spiritual makeup of man, we're not always the same self-starters that women are. This is not, I'm not just like playing to the audience over here. This is Yesoda's thick ideas. That ultimately, so what is the Gemara saying over here? The Gemara is saying that the wife has an obligation to move things along. Again, this doesn't free a husband from his obligation. A man has to grow up and shouldn't need his wife to get him out of bed. Right? He should be enough of a self-starter motivated to get, but sometimes things need a little bit of movement. And it is, the Gemara is saying, the wife has not the duty, but the distinct privilege of enabling and moving the pieces of her home. She has the schus to be the enabler of her children's ruchnius. She has the schus of being the enabler of her husband's ruchnius. But I want to be clear. This doesn't mean that she is the enabler of others to the exclusion of her own growth. This is not saying that the only thing that a Jewish woman has in this world is doing for others. My job is to be behind the scenes. No one sees me. No one knows me. I'm the one who's moving all the pieces. That's not what the Gemara is saying. What the Gemara is saying is, in addition to all of the aspects of personal growth that every single Jew has, there is an added dimension to Jewish womanhood that is a force multiplier in the world of Ruchnius. And that is the ability to set a tone in a home that enables the self-actualization of all of the members of that home, of the children, of the husband, of everyone. And lest you think this is just a woman thing, it's not a woman thing. Because who did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to also? This was a Moshe Rabbeinu thing. This is one of the highest levels a person could achieve. Meaning, the Gemara is phrasing this in terms of women. Because I guess Chazal felt something inherent in the nature of women. But in reality, the message is for everyone. There's this dialectic in our Yiddishkeit. There's what we do for ourselves, which is incredible. But then there's the force multiplier in Ruchnius, which is what you enable in others. And when you enable others to grow, whoever those others are, your children, your husband, your friends, your family, co-workers, whoever it might be, whatever you enable, and as a result of your enabling, if growth occurs, you share in the zechuyos of that growth. So if we bring this together, it turns out that perhaps, again, the notion of the wings being stretched upwards, protecting the Torah, is ultimately, again, a form of enabling. If you think about that, so the wings spread upwards also provide a canopy, provide protection, provide shade, almost providing the nurturing environment, the spiritual incubator in which everyone else has the ability to fully self-actualize and go on to accomplish incredible things. So if you bring this all together, with this we'll stop, it turns out that you begin to see incredible things from the Kruvin. All of these dramatic lessons from two little golden cherub-like figures perched on top of the Arun. Upneim ishal achiv. We saw the lesson in Shalom Bayis. We saw the lesson in interpersonal conduct. You don't have to be the world's most incredible balas chesed. You just have to be a nice, kind person who recognizes and acknowledges the humanity of the other. You also need to find time. Upneim ishal achiv. Introspective. Person has to take time to look inward. Where am I? Who am I? What do I want to do? Parsei kenafayim. Even if you're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you've accomplished a lot, your wings always have to be positioned upward, ready to take flight, because growth is a necessary part. Parsei kenafayim, protect the Aron. What does protecting or protecting Torah? It means protect the Kedusha in your marriage. Which again, not a topic for tonight, that's a separate topic. About fostering, nurturing, and protecting Kedusha in a marriage. It means fostering, nurturing, protecting Kedusha in your home. And ultimately, again, it means providing the incubatory, I don't think it's a word, but it sounds good, right? Incubatory space in which you enable the growth of others. Unless you think that's just a woman thing, that's a Jew thing. All of us are supposed to become enablers. Because what we do for ourselves is incredible. But the growth and the kiddusha that we enable in others, that's what continues to yield dividends for generations and generations to come. All right. Any questions? Great. Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you for us. Nisham Shem and Aliyah. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. I'll tell you, I say goodbye. Have a good night.